All right, it is now my pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight. His name is Paul, and he's from Tulare. Let's give a round of applause for Paul.
Hello, everyone. My name is Paul. I am an alcoholic. It's a pleasure being here. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak. I take every opportunity I can to speak, you know, to one fellow alcoholic, two fellow alcoholics, 90, 50, whatever it is. And every time I do, I remember the first meeting between Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, and many of you know it better than I do. But Dr. Bob was a well-known doctor in his community, well-known for not so much his medical skills, but well-known because of his alcoholism. And his wife, his patients, his pastor, they all tried to help him defeat what they called this alcohol disease. And nobody could. So when he heard that somebody named Bill Wilson was coming to his house to try again, he sort of reluctantly said, okay, well, we'll try. Let's have some coffee. So when Bill went in, introduced himself, Dr. Bob looked at him and he said, I got to tell you, fella, better men than you have been in here trying to keep me sober. And I really don't think you're going to do much better. You're not going to be able to keep me sober today or any day. And Bill looked at him with this puzzled look. And he said, there must be some miscommunication, something that wasn't passed along correctly. I'm not here to keep you sober. I'm here to keep myself sober. And that's the way it began. With one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, trying to keep each other sober. That was in the 1930s. Two people. Now AA is all over the world. But the most important group is right here tonight. And I'm here trying to keep myself sober today. And in so doing, perhaps I can help you not only stay sober, but to enjoy sobriety. I am from Tulare County. I was born at Tagus Ranch. My father was a farm laborer. He came to Tulare County in the late 1940s as a bracero. Most of you know there was a program between the United States and Mexico to provide farm labor while most of the American men between 18 and 35 were out fighting the wars. And so he settled in at Tagus Ranch, and that's where I was born. And I lived there until 1969 when I graduated from Tulare Western. And as luck would have it, I did well in school. I enjoyed school. I had supportive parents, supportive older brothers and sisters. And I went to Europe as an exchange student, the first from my high school, the second from my community. And it was a great opportunity. And I'm here to tell you that I've been fortunate. I've had great opportunities in life. I've met people, not only in AA, but outside of AA, that you've heard of. But those opportunities, I was unable to really take advantage of. Why? I'm an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. And being and working in the United States Senate, being an international banker, traveling full expenses throughout the United States, Europe, and Mexico, was not as important, not nearly as important, as having enough cash in my pockets to get the next drink. The first time I got drunk, I was 15. And like teenagers around this area, we would all congregate out in Mooney's Grove on a Sunday afternoon. And there was always alcohol. There was always beer. There was always somebody to get it for you. And it's been my experience that it rarely, rarely took much money. For some reason, people were willing to share it. When I was working, I really never had a lack of money. when I was traveling, I was on expenses. And I can tell you story after story about being in airplanes or at airports and thinking, looking at the menu, knowing I should get something to eat, and thinking, damn, I'm not going to pay $3.75 for a sandwich. That's highway robbery. So I went to the bar and I put down a $100 bill and I sat there drinking. And if I needed more than $100, I had it. But I was so drunk by the time I got somewhere near the end of the $100, I really have no memory of that. I have many memories of being drunk at airports. And I mention this because I was on business, because I had opportunities, because I had responsibilities. And again, I used to wonder why, but I stopped wondering why, because as I look back on my life, there's only one reason why. An alcoholic. Alcoholics want nothing more than the next drink. And at the end of my career as an active alcoholic, it was no longer not even the drink I had in my hand that was important. I couldn't enjoy that drink because I was too worried about the next one. Too worried about whether I was going to be too drunk to go out and get some more alcohol. Too worried about whether I had enough cash in my pocket to go buy some more alcohol. Too worried about whether my kids were going to call and keep me from having the next drink. Everything in my life centered around the next drink. First time I got drunk, as I mentioned, I was 15 years old here in Mooney's Grove. And I drank a little bit in high school, but never to where I would consider it manifested itself into a problem. I still did well in school. I went to Europe, where they have no age limit. I was in Austria, and they have no age limit of drinking. So, and the kids there, 17 and 18, it's common. They don't go out and get drunk all the time. But they do drink. They drink at home. They drink at the cocktail lounges, at the bars, etc. Well, I started drinking. And I started drinking till I got drunk. And again, I should have been doing other things that were more productive. But I didn't care. I didn't care that I had this wonderful opportunity to study history, to indulge myself, to learn another culture, to do that. No, I was just coming into my own. I was just maturing into a full-blown alcoholic. That's what I cared about. Nothing is more important to an alcoholic than the next drink. So I finished my year, and I came back and went to college in Los Angeles. And at the beginning of my academic career, I was doing well. I was doing well and was primed to do excellently in the 4 years. And my academic advisors all assumed that I would do well. What they didn't know until my second or third year was that I was an alcoholic. And taking advantage of my academic opportunity was not nearly as important as my next drink. But I was doing well enough, even at that I was afforded an opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. and work in the office of a very well-known senator, where I was tutored in writing by men who wrote for a former American president. I had private tutors. Yeah. I mention that because that's a great opportunity, especially for somebody who had a passion of American history the way I did, for somebody who wanted to learn, for somebody who wanted to be around these people he had only read about in school. I wanted all that. But I didn't want it as much as I wanted the next drink. And I got my next drink. And again, I worked in with some people where money was no object. They throw parties and that, but so it was never a matter. It was the importance of the next drink. And so I finished that, my academic career, and I went into banking. And I was traveling, doing well. And again, despite the fact I was doing well, not because of me, but despite of myself, in my life as an active alcoholic and even in sobriety, nobody has done me more harm than I have done myself. I take responsibility for the harm I've caused myself and the harm I have caused others. But I could only do that by working the 12 steps. I could only do that because of everything that I have learned in AA. Everything that I know about being a good and decent human being, I have learned here. Everything I've learned about being of service to your fellow man, not just your fellow alcoholic, that's important, but to anybody else that needs a hand, I have learned here. I left the bank and I went to New Mexico, where I had the wherewithal to open my own business. I opened up, for those of you who are familiar with New Mexico, in between Albuquerque and Santa Fe, is this great expanse known as the Rio Grande Valley. I opened up a bed and breakfast in there. It's still operating. I sold that after 10 years. Still operating. It's very well known. It's called Hacienda Vargas. You can look it up in the internet. But I went and established that for several reasons. But the most important reason was that I thought I would have more time, more unfettered time for my next drink. I didn't do it because it had never been done before. I didn't do it because I wanted to use my business skills. I didn't do it because I wanted to build a team and a way to educate my nephews and nieces in how to do business and how to work with people and how to do goals. No, I did it because I wanted more time for the next drink. I am an alcoholic. That's all I cared about. And so came the day when, during this period of time, I was drinking every night till I passed out. I used to drink a lot of wine. I used to fool myself thinking I was drinking good quality wine, but it had been a long time since I bothered about that. Quantity was much more important than quality anymore. And during this time, my son was going to college here in California. And it was the summer, and he was coming down. He's going to land at Albuquerque International on Father's Day. And then I had secured him a part-time job with the tourism of Sandoval County, which was my county around my bed and breakfast in. And so a week before, I go, well, Nick, what time does your plane land? And he told me it lands at 12:30. I go, okay, great. I said to myself, 12:30. Oh, that's great. I have time for a bottle of wine. It's no longer a drink or a glass, or for a bottle of wine before he gets there. That was my only thought. I was into my first bottle when I got a call from him at the airport. His plane was delayed. He goes, I hope that doesn't upset your schedule, Dad. I go, no, not at all, pal. You can't help it. And so I'll be there. And as soon as I hung up the phone, I said to myself, aha, time for a second bottle since his plane is delayed. I'm an active alcoholic. That's all I care about. So by the time I took off to go pick him up at the airport, I had no business being behind a wheel. And two bottles of wine, Interstate 25, Sunday traffic around a major airport. But I went. I didn't care. All I cared about was the time to have that second bottle of wine, my next drink for that morning. And then something very, very interesting happened. On the way there, I was feeling some regret. It was Father's Day. My son was coming in. And I knew I was drunk. I parked the car in the multi-story parking level, and I was walking towards the sliding door entrance. And I thought I was speaking to myself. It's the first time I said, "Paul, maybe you are an alcoholic." And to this day, I heard a voice behind me that said, "Yes, you are." And I turned around. I was scared. I thought I was speaking out loud. I had intended to be thinking, but I go, "Oh my God, I'm speaking out loud." And there was nobody there. Nobody there. But I know I heard the voice. And I attribute that to the first time my higher power came into my life. My higher power that had protected me and actually protected other people against me. Against the drunken Paul Vargas who was in the freeways when he had no business being there. Protecting other people against the drunken Paul Vargas who didn't care about them, who didn't care about his responsibilities. Protecting, my higher power protected my children against me, who was drunk at the time, in their presence. And so I picked up my son, and he knew I was visibly drunk, or had been drinking. And then a couple of days later, my daughter came in. My daughter had already had a child who was less than a year. She was living in Tucson. But she came by herself. I later found out this was a plan that she and my son had had. And while they were there, they said, "Hey, Dad, let's go out to breakfast tomorrow," the next day. And they remembered, and I remembered, how much fun it used to be when we would have breakfast together. So we went to a cafe nearby. And it was then that they looked at me and they said, "Dad," and they weren't demanding. They weren't, you know, angry. And for those of you who know that feeling of people you love who know you're an alcoholic and are no longer angry, who are no longer angry, it is that sense of pity they convey to you. That it hurts and is devastating, especially when you as an alcoholic know that you deserve it. So they asked and they said, "You know, Dad, we know you've always drank a lot, but we noticed that now you've been drinking a lot more. And we're kind of concerned that you're going to hurt yourself or worse yet, hurt somebody else. So we wondered if maybe you would consider, I don't know, going to somewhere, to a doctor or to AA. I don't know, but would you consider doing something?" And I said, yeah, I'll consider. I'll do something. I'll see. I don't know. And that's when it began. For a week, I did nothing. My son was staying with me, and every day he said, "Did you call somebody?" I go, no, I'm going to get a number. "Did you call somebody?" No, I'm going to get a number. Fourth day, he comes to me and says, "Dad, guess what? I have a number." And I called the rehab there in Albuquerque, made an appointment for the following Monday as soon as I could get in. And I told him I have an appointment. And he said, "Oh, great." So he said, "I'm going to go with you. I'll just tell my boss that I'm going to be late, but I'm going to go with you." And I go, "Okay." So we drove down there together. And I checked in with the receptionist, paid my money. And nice lounge area. I go, "Okay, Nick, well, just wait for me here and I'll be out when the doctor's ready." And he says, "No, Dad, I want to come in with you." I go, "I'm not sure you can." He goes, "Well, I'm going to come in with you, Dad. We'll work it out." And he wanted to come in with me because he knew that as drunk as I was or drunk as I could get, I was still smart enough to bamboozle any medical doctor that was there. So he came in and he sat down and I was talking to the doctor. And she said, "Okay, I have this series of questions here. Now, there are no right or wrong answers." He goes, "You know, it's just an opportunity for us to talk, for me to get to know you a little bit better, discuss whatever you want to discuss." And she finally got to that question, that inevitable question. "Well, how much do you drink a day? How much do you drink a day?" I looked at her, complete silence. Then I looked at my son, Nicholas. And Nick is a very fun-loving guy. He has brown eyes. And I've had a lot of fun with him over the years, more so now. And he looked at me, and those brown eyes were steely. His face was more serious than I've ever seen it before or since. And he was looking at me as if to say or convey to me, "Dad, what you answer now will determine our relationship for the rest of our lives." And so I looked at the doctor and I said, "Well, every day I drink as much as I can, as early as I can, and I normally pass out on the couch and wake up and eventually make my way to my bed. So I do drink and get drunk every day." And that was the first time I was honest to anybody. And I looked at Nick, and he was smiling, so happy. Because he knew instinctively that I'd begun my recovery. And then we talked some more. This and that, schedules this and that, what it would take, the commitment I was going to be asked to make. And I was committed to it. And then I got very indignant and I said, "Doctor, I promise you I'm going to do this. Nick, I'm going to do this. I promise you. But there is no goddamn way I'm ever going to go to AA." I said that. And she said, "Okay, well, we'll see." First week in rehab, I was at lunch. Saw three guys who were there too, talking amongst themselves, and I heard them talk about AA or meetings. Now remember, now I'm a dry drunk, right? Dry drunk. And I got really upset and really angry because I thought they were talking about something and not sharing it with me, withholding it from me. Besides, I was a dry drunk, so I was looking for any excuse to be angry. And so I go, "What are you guys talking about?" And they go, "Oh, we're talking about AA meeting. You want to go?" And I said, "Yes," not because I wanted to go, because I wanted to spike them for withholding that information from me. And I went. And I went. And on the first day, as it happened so often, I heard one of the people there telling parts of my story. Couldn't believe it. Could not believe it. And then during the rehab, they had us find our home group in the area. And I found this group that met outside of Albuquerque in a small village that was older than Albuquerque, in meetings that met at 6:30 in the morning. And I go, "Oh, this is great." I go, "At 6:30 in the morning, who's going to go to a meeting at 6:30 in the morning? So I will be anonymous there, because who's going to be there? Who would get up at 6:30 in the morning to go talk?" Well, it wasn't until much later that I found out that the people most committed to their sobriety and to helping others go at 6:30 in the morning. And I walked in there thinking I was going to see a group like this of 90, 100 people. There were 10 people there. They all knew each other. I was the only one that was not known, so they knew I was new. And the chairman finally got to that point in the opening. "Is there anyone here who has less than 30 days? Could you please give us your name, not to embarrass you, but to get to know you better?" And then another interesting thing happened. I sat there listening to the silence, and all of a sudden, I heard somebody say, "Hi, my name is Paul. I am an alcoholic." And it wasn't until a few seconds later that I realized I was listening to my own voice. And I started sobbing, and I started crying. And I thought in my ignorance as a dry drunk that I was crying because for the first time I admitted I was an alcoholic in front of strangers. But I was an ignorant alcoholic. So I didn't realize until much later that I was actually crying tears of joy, because at that very instant, my journey on sobriety began. It began. That was in August of 1996. And I have the the gift of never having had a relapse. Oh, I've come close. I've come close, but I've reached out to my sponsor. I reached out to my friends in AA. And for me, it was never when I was going through challenges of life. It was never when my mom passed away, my dad passed away, my sister passed away. It was never when I was short of money. It was never when somebody was ill. No, no, I could manage those things. When I came close to having a relapse was when things were going great. When I got a job, when I had money, when I had my expense account again, when I had something good that happened, the first thought in my mind, because remember, I am an alcoholic, always wanting his next drink. The first thought through my mind was, wow, this is great. Sobriety does work. I probably should have a bottle of champagne to celebrate. That's my alcoholic mind talking. Remember, alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful, and to that I would add infinitely patient. Before I talk about a couple of other things, I want to talk to you about what it is like now. Told you how when I was an active alcoholic, my only concern was the next drink. Told you that the only reason I started the journey of sobriety is because my son and my daughter asked me to. And now every day is better. Do I have a perfect life? No way. Do I still feel pain? Absolutely. Do I still have challenges in life? Absolutely. But I am sober, and being sober, I can deal with those. I should have welcomed those of you who are in AA for less than a year, less than 6 months, less than 30 days, because much of what I say is very relevant to you. Much of what I say at this meeting and other meetings, you won't believe. And I do not blame you, because I have walked every step. I have lived every second of my journey. And to tell you the truth, sometimes I don't believe it, but it is true. And what I revel in delight and enjoy these days is not just being sober, not just being there for people I love, not just being here for people who ask me to take on responsibilities, not just so I can see the woman that I'm in love with smile on a daily basis. The best time of my day, every day, is between 10:30 and 11 o'clock at night. Why? Because that's about the time I go to bed. And why is it so much fun? Because I'm sober. Because I am going to lie down in my bed, in my house, and go to sleep, fall asleep. I am not going to pass out the way I used to. And the next morning, I will wake up, if God wills it. But I won't come to the way I used to as an active alcoholic. I won't be afraid to open my eyes and start learning about the damage I did the night before, much of which I could not remember. No, I look forward to it. Again, I mentioned that everything I learned about being a good human being and also about being a happy human being, I have learned in these rooms. Such joy. Such joy. And after I wake up, I remind myself that I was born an alcoholic. I shall die an alcoholic. But in between, if I go to meetings, if I practice rigorous honesty and share my life, my experiences, my hope with fellow alcoholics, then I'll deserve one more day of sobriety. I congratulate all of you that got your chips today, that are looking forward. But I would like to share with you that even though I look forward to my chips, or I get my chips every year, the most important day of all of that is today. If I manage to stay sober until 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night tonight, then I shall have all those days of sobriety behind me. And I will look forward to tomorrow's day of sobriety and what it brings and how I can be of service to somebody. So today, one day at a time. I know that this group focuses on spirituality very much, and it's great. You know, everything about this program is great. But I wanted to share with you just a few of my spiritual experiences. And again, I was lucky. In the big book, we read about the different types of spiritual experiences. You know, not many have the burning bush. We all have sort of a transition from where we were into some type of a new spiritual life. Early on, in the first 90 days of my journey, and this was very important because this is one of the reasons that I'm still here. I had the burning bush type of experience. I left the meeting one morning, got into my car, and all of a sudden I was cognizant that I could hear better. I had music on. I looked in the sky, in the beautiful New Mexican sky. The blue was even bluer. The whites were even whiter. Everything. My senses were so attuned. It is the only time I ever had that experience. I've never had it again. And I drove slowly because I couldn't believe what I was experiencing. And I've never had it again, but I had it that day. And early on in my sobriety, I entered AA in August. In October was my grandson's first birthday, and I wanted to go visit him in Tucson. And my sponsor said, well, yeah, I know it's important, and he worked with me, and he got me ready. We looked up meetings in Tucson, near where my daughter lived at the time. And this was before 9/11, so he was able to go with me all the way up to the gate to make sure that, you know, I didn't have a relapse at the bar there, because that was one of my triggers. They were playing bars, and he got me there. And normally, I would go to a 6:30 in the morning meeting. I got there at 3 or 4, whenever it was, and there was a 7 o'clock meeting walking distance from where my daughter lives, so that was great. So I went over there. It's 6:45. I was 6:50. It was 6:55. Nobody was there. I go, oh, they must have changed it, or maybe I got it wrong. I'm going to go back. Well, and this is where the story becomes really interesting. As I was leaving, these two guys, and again, I'm estimating, maybe 25 years old, friendly, very friendly, they had on coveralls. So if I had to guess, it would have been like mechanics overalls. They had their name on there. Very friendly. But they didn't strike me. I've had relatives, and I've been around mechanics most of my life. They didn't strike me as mechanics for some reason. And they go, where are you going? I go, well, I was here for a meeting, but there doesn't seem to be anybody here. I go, well, he goes, well, we're here. It only takes three of us. I go, okay. So I sat down. And instead of sitting in a circle, the three of us sat in a row with our backs against the wall. In walked in this alcoholic who attended this meeting. His name is Dale. Dale and I are still friends. I still see him when I go to Tucson. He came in, and he had a very bad day. As one of these two gentlemen was reading, Dale raised his hand and said, I'm sorry for interrupting the beginning, but I need to talk. And I said, okay. So Dale talked and told us the story that all day he had been in and out of bars. At the last bar, he actually put down the money to pay for the drink, which he did not take. But he had had a bad day. He had had a bad day. And he talked for half an hour. And then I became cognizant that I was no longer listening to him with my ears, but I knew what he was saying. And it was looking at him through a prism of something. I don't have the words to describe how the air was different around him, sort of like a rainbow. And he finished. And then I said, he said, "Thanks, Paul. You helped me stay sober today. You helped me stay sober today. I think I can go to sleep sober today." It's the first time any fellow alcoholic had thanked me for helping him stay sober. I see Dale again often. I talk to him. He's one of the five friends I have in AA that has been very, very helpful in my sobriety. I enjoy his company. He has an interesting story. He's enjoying sobriety. He has a noon group in Tucson. He has never seen those two guys. He didn't know who they were. So we are convinced they were angels that were sent there for me or for him. For both of us, probably. That was within my first 90 days. I have two other stories I want to share. There's an old saying from the old timers that if you've never gotten really angry at an AA meeting, you haven't gone to enough meetings. And one of the pleasures I have had is traveling throughout California, the country, going to different AA meetings. And in all of those meetings in the last 20 years or so, 21 years, there's been only one meeting where I ever felt intense anger. It was in San Francisco, noon meeting in the financial district at an old church. Well attended, 50 or 60 people from there. And there was this individual who was speaking and criticizing heavily the program, criticizing its precepts, criticizing its benefits, criticizing its hopes, criticizing its promises of spiritual reawakening, and on and on and on. And I got really upset. And I was getting to the point to where I was going to use my intellectual skills to really either berate her or debate with her or just to call her some nasty names. But I sat there and I said, please God, don't let me do this. I don't want to do it. Don't let me do this. Please send somebody to help me. Or words to that effect. And I was doing that sign. All of a sudden, I'm sitting there in a row. There are three empty seats. This guy comes out in the middle of the meeting, sits down at the end of my row. And he waves at me. As if I knew him. I didn't know him. He waves at me. And then he stands up and starts saying the things that I wish I would have said. But he said them politely. He said them professionally. He said them with consideration and compassion for the woman who had been criticizing. He said it perfectly. He made the point in a perfect way for an AA meeting. And I was awed. I was awed. And again, I know most of you don't believe this, but he was an angel. Meeting broke up. I'm leaving. I have to get back to where I was going. And he is surrounded by some people he's talking to, and I'm leaving. And all of a sudden, he says, "Hey, Paul, see you later." How he would know my name, because I didn't speak and I didn't introduce myself. AA meetings and angels. I have one more story. I know I'm running short of time. You haven't given me the 5-minute signal yet. But thank you. One story which I enjoy telling because, again, it goes to my higher power. I was in Nicaragua working as a consultant for some individuals. Most of my time was in Managua. I was in Granada, which is a small town outside of Managua. And one of the interesting things about Nicaragua is they do not give their streets names the way we do. Main Street, 3rd Street, A Street, Avenues. No, your address is sort of like a direction from a landmark. The light pole here, 3 blocks south, 4 blocks north, 3 blocks east, next to the blue house. When I first got there, I used to take a cell phone bill with me in case I had to get a cab back to where I was staying. I would just show him the cell phone. Oh, yeah, I know where that is. Well, anyway, I was going to an AA meeting. I found out where the meeting was, and the meeting again was, let's say, 6 o'clock. So I started at about 5 o'clock because I knew it was going to take me a while. So I start walking, looking this, oh, 3 blocks south, 3 blocks north, 3 blocks this. I saw this little chapel, beautiful chapel with the fountain in it. And I saw 3 of them, and I go, oh, maybe it's a tradition for in this town to have chapels like that. It wasn't until later that I realized I had passed the same chapel 3 times. And so I finally sat down at 6:45, accepting the fact that I would not make it. So I sat there in front of the beautiful chapel, in front of the fountain, water fountain, and I started meditating, and I said, God, I've tried. If you want me to make this meeting, send me some help. If not, I'll sit here for an hour or so and pray and focus on my sobriety and et cetera, et cetera. Well, as I'm doing this, all of a sudden I feel this nudge on my left shoulder. Not a push, but a nudge. So I turned around, and lo and behold, it's a donkey. It's with his nose nudged me, and I said to myself, I wonder why God sent me a donkey. Is he trying to tell me something, or I can relate to this? So as I'm thinking about it, this young boy, 7 or 8, comes with a switch, and he's berating his donkey, you know, dirty donkey, what happened? He had been chasing him, and he apologized to me. I go, no, that's quite all right. And I go, by the way, I showed him the address. Do you know where this is? He goes, oh, it's about 5 minutes over there. I go, I'll give you an American dollar if you take me. And an American dollar, 8-year-old boy, that's quite a bit of money. So he said, can I bring the donkey? I go, sure, bring the donkey. And so he guided me there. We chatted, and sure enough, I got there with about 2 minutes to spare to my meeting, to my AA meeting. And I gave the young man $2, and he went away, and I made the meeting. And again, this was my higher power getting me to a meeting. My higher power also has a sense of humor, by the way. I love that story. I want to thank you for your attention. I want to thank you for the privilege of being here. And I just want you to remember, my name is Paul. I am an alcoholic.